Hello and welcome to Intrepid Heroes Presents, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games. I'm John Godek, and with me today is Rob McCreary. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
So Rob is the creative director for Starfinder at Paizo, where he was also a founding member of the Starfinder role-playing game. In addition, he was the first author in the Starfinder Adventure Path, writing Incident at Absalon Station. Rob, can you tell us a little bit about your role as creative director and how you interact with designers and developers and authors and whatnot?
Sure. Creative director is kind of lots of different things. Overall, my focus is on the Starfinder brand. And it's sort of taking a high-level view of what we're doing with our products, what sort of stories we're telling, also dealing with licensed products, you know, people that want to do licensed things dealing with Starfinder to make sure that they match.
Oh, so you have input in when somebody requests to do a license, that whether or not that's going to fit what you're doing as well. So, like, third-party compatible stuff, or is it actual IP that you're talking about?
It's usually the IP. The third-party publishers, they can publish things through the either the community use license or the Starfinder or Pathfinder compatible stuff, and those have rules already associated with them. These are for other companies that are producing things. You know, whether it's there haven't been a whole lot of licensed Starfinder products yet. But we did for Pathfinder, we did the Kingmaker computer game was done by another company, but because it's a licensed product, a good example. We just finally came out. Ultra Pro came out with plush Skittermander dice bags, so that's the thing. They're producing them, they're selling them, but you know, we got approvals on what they look like and sent them notes back on. You know, we want these to match our Skittermander, so they represent our brand. So there's some of that stuff. In terms of working with developers and designers, we're all part of the Starfinder team. So we have, you know, discussions about what kind of products to do, what's going to go in those products. Occasionally, when I have time, I get to go in and work on some development stuff as well, or writing. I don't have as much contact with authors now as I used to. That primarily goes through the developers who are responsible for the book. And like I said, I'm more looking at things from the higher level and the strategies of the brand, and just, you know, making sure that Starfinder things are Starfinder.
Right. So when you talk about strategies for the brand, and so if I'm looking at, so say there's a new AP coming out, and so you have a developer assigned to the AP, then what type of interaction then do you have in terms of what goes into that? Do you help set kind of the overarching themes for it, or maybe where it might take place, or are you just saying, I just want to make sure that this fits our Starfinder, you know, IP overall? I mean, kind of, how does that work?
Yeah, it kind of varies based on the product. I worked on the Pathfinder APs for a number of years, so I started off working on the Starfinder APs as well, like you mentioned. So I have a certain place in my heart for those. So I have the AP team and I, you know, we have meetings where we talk about what we want the AP to be and sort of the overall story arcs or the beats we want to hit. Usually the specific details, you know, I leave to the developers and the authors, but it's more of just like, okay, what's the main story? What's the theme? You know, is this the kind of story you want to tell? And any other kind of ideas that I want to have in there. But, you know, it's definitely the development leads, Jason Keeley and Jason Tondreau, you know, it's their APs. They're the ones developing it. You know, I'm just there to kind of help and get in a little bit of stuff that I want to see as well, maybe.
Okay. So can you tell us a little bit about your journey to become the creative director? I know you had been an editor prior to that, but I don't know any other roles that you had here at Paizo. So kind of how did you get from, you know, where you started to where you're at now?
So I actually started with I believe it was the second RPG Superstar contest in 2008. I was living in Europe at the time, and I was sort of missing gaming, and I went looking, you know, to Paizo, and I was like, oh, they have a contest. I'll just enter and create a magic item. And I did, and the RPG Superstar, you know, people vote on different rounds of different things, and the goal is the winner gets to write a module. I didn't win, but I was one of the final four finalists after all the
rounds.
Which
is very good.
Thank you. And so that gave me an opportunity. They offered the top four finalists, Paizo offered them to contribute to the first Pathfinder Chronicles campaign setting book. Mm-hmm. And so that was my first freelance work for Paizo. So I started doing freelance. I started writing more things. And then I was looking for a change. I was teaching English in the Czech Republic at the time, and I was looking for a change. And Paizo had an opening for an editor, and so I applied for it. And fortunately, they already kind of knew me from my writing.
Right.
And I had met a few of the Paizo staff at Gen Con UK at mm-hmm. the time. And yeah, and so I started as an editor, and very quickly I moved to development. We needed people to develop, and I started moving first like modules and then the Pathfinder Adventure Path. Mm-hmm. And I worked on those for a number of years, so my imprint is on a number of those. Mm-hmm. And kind of, I was just a developer and then senior developer for Pathfinder. And then when we started putting together the Starfinder game, it became, it's like, well, we want to do an AP for Starfinder. And I've always been a big science fiction fan. Mm-hmm. So I moved over, and then it became also clear. It's like, oh, we also need to build the game. And so right. I was, you know,
off just writing you're going to write an AP. And they said, oh, we'll put you in charge of the whole brand, too.
Well, that was later, because then when we launched Starfinder, right. James Sutter was creative director,
right.
And I was just one of the design leads. And then when he left, then I became right. creative director of Starfinder, where I am now.
Seems like there's a lot of promotion from within for Paizo, where you have people starting. A lot of people I've talked to have been on the editorial staff, and then they've kind of worked into development and whatnot. So it seems like a pretty common path for people.
Yeah, I think it depends. We have, you know, it's some people are more, particularly with editing, you can have, there's various amounts of like gamerism, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you can be a good editor and not be a gamer,
right.
or not be interested right. in that. But a lot of people, there's a lot of crossover with mm-hmm. that too. Mm-hmm. And so I think, yeah, we have gotten a lot of people from the editing staff mm-hmm. moving into developing and writing.
So what led to this decision to create Starfinder in the first place? So this, you know, came out at Gen Con 2017?
Yes.
Right? And it was, from what I'm hearing, it was kind of surprised at how well it was received at Gen Con, at least. Everything sold out the first day, is what I'm told.
Yeah.
And people were kind of like, wow, this is something big. So what led to that creation in the first place? I mean, it seems like, you know, looking at up until this past quarter, it had been listed as like one of the top five RPGs being sold by stores in the, you know, since its release. Now this last quarter, because of timing, it didn't seem like it was on there. But I imagine because the character operations manual actually missed the quarter cutoff for it. But I imagine the next quarter is probably going to be back up there again. So what kind of led it to come about in the first place, going from Pathfinder saying, "Hey, we're going to go to this new setting"?
I mean, there's been lots of sort of science fiction elements in fantasy games going mm-hmm. back. You know, there's the Expedition to the Barrier Peaks module
right.
is
yeah.
a classic thing, you know, where you're investigating a...
That's really old school, yeah.
Right, but but we have things in Pathfinder, too. Yeah. You know, we have the Land of Numeria that has mm-hmm. a crashed spaceship mm-hmm. in it. But really the seed came from... We've talked a little bit over the years in Pathfinder about the other planets in the solar system mm-hmm. besides Galarian. And James Sutter, who was the first creative director for Starfinder, wrote a book for Pathfinder called Distant Worlds, which described mm-hmm. all of the planets in Pathfinder. So we've always had this sort of space element, and there's a lot of people on staff that are fans of fantasy and science fiction, myself included, and it just seemed the right time, and we're like, well, you know, why don't we see about doing a science fantasy game?
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of already had the framework of the setting, at least, in mm-hmm. terms of those planets, and that kind of is what became the Pact Worlds. And then we're like, mm-hmm. well, let's just go and expand, you know, into the whole galaxy.
Well, and it's been really well received. I mean, you know, I've been gaming for, I'm thinking, longer than you. I'm pretty sure I'm older than you. And, you know, I've played Traveler and Gamma World and GURPS and a whole bunch of other ones that have tried to bring sci-fi into the gaming universe. And you know, they seem to come and go. You know, Star Wars right now seems to be doing okay with a couple games. What is it about Starfinder that seems to be really grabbing people and saying, hey, this is one that's going to have legs? Because I think it's from what I see, and I run a lot of Starfinder, people really, really like it a lot. So what's about it that causes that, do you know?
I don't know if I know for real what okay. It is. I mean,
what do you think? Yeah,
we certainly didn't. Yeah. We hoped it would be successful. Yeah. We didn't like, oh, this is a sure thing. It wasn't anything like that. Yeah. I think that a couple of factors have contributed to Starfinder's success. I think one thing, it isn't just Pathfinder in space.
Right.
It is more than that, but that's also kind of a convenient shorthand, and mm-hmm. a lot of the things that draw people to Pathfinder, I think, draw them to Starfinder mm-hmm. as well, particularly like Pathfinder players. There's a lot of commonalities, both in the setting and in the game system.
Right.
I think there's also, you know, you mentioned like Star Wars, that's tied to a very specific right. IP. Mm-hmm. And we kind of have a whole galaxy to play with, mm-hmm. and that galaxy is huge enough that almost any kind of play right. can go in there. Right. So it's kind of, you know, you can play a gritty cyberpunk mm-hmm. game. You can play a big, you know, high concept space opera. You can go out and colonize a new planet. There's mm-hmm. all sorts of different stories you can tell using just the core rules of Starfinder. And I think another thing that helps is, you know, it is a game line that we support with additional things, mostly
right.
the adventure path. That's a major mm-hmm. thing. I think a lot of games, you know, people release a game, but then it's kind of left up to the players and GMs to continue to do content. And while people right. do that in Starfinder, and we encourage it, we also, you know, have monthly modules and other tie-in products to help people support and keep playing the game.
Yeah, there's quite a few people that like to homebrew, but a lot of folks like to have some bases.
Yeah.
And I think having those APs... You know, so I'm a big fan of The Expanse. And so when the Green Ronin came out with The Expanse book, we bought it and we played the first scenario. And then it's like, okay, what do we want to do now? This is too much to build a whole homebrew around. And so we've been waiting now. They got new scenarios coming out. You know, right. Shadowrun's got a new release. And now they got new. But it's like with Starfinder, it seems like you kind of hit the deck running, both with APs coming out now, a lot of them, right? But also for society play.
Exactly.
You know? And so between the two of those, you can get, like for my group, we're probably one of the most active groups on the West Coast, maybe even the whole country. And we now, for a while, we were well ahead of, there was not enough content for us. And at the point now, because of all the APs rolling in, now we're basically play enough that we can meet all the content as it comes out, you know? And so if there's a little bit more content ends up coming out, and I know there's more adventure paths coming, then there's going to be more than we can actually play. And we're playing 2 days a week, you know, Starfinder. So,
yeah.
You know, I think that's a big plus. And then when I look at like the Pathfinder 2 rollout, you know, how much came with that? I think that's a great way to set up the game for success, you know, to have, you know, you got the core rules, but now we also have these other adventures, other hardcovers coming, boom, boom, boom. Everybody knows. And with the track record you have with Pathfinder, people have a vision for, oh, they're going to build out all the stuff they did before for these systems. So I think that experience that people have had, even if it's a different game system, they know the company, right? And what the company's track record has been isn't been, okay, they kind of fire something out and leave it. It's like, no, we stand behind it. We continue to work with it. You know, new developers, new people are coming online, new things are coming. So that's the thing that excites me. And then, you know, the third-party publishers are really picking up a lot as well, I think, for Starfinder. I mean, you know, own Casey Stevens, who has been here, you know, has been pretty active with things, and he has his 52 and 52 mm-hmm. Campaign that he's doing, where he's going to release a new product every week for the entire year, and he's going to have Pathfinder 1, Pathfinder 2, 5th Ed, and Starfinder conversions for that. So, you know, it seems like there's a lot coming out. So I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, and that's something, I mean, that's an advantage of, you know, with the history of Pathfinder, right. when we first released the game, and even when we first released Starfinder, and even now, you know, people are like, oh, well, we want this, because they were looking at 8 years of right. Pathfinder, you know, and it's like, yeah, we have to get there.
Right.
Like, all this stuff was released over time. So the third-party publishers right. help kind of fill in some of those gaps mm-hmm. that we haven't gotten to with new products. And like you mentioned, the Starfinder Society. I mean, mm-hmm. that is another huge contributor to Starfinder's success. And again, we were fortunate. We already had the Pathfinder right. organized play program. So just adding the Starfinder Society component, you know, we already had the structures, the infrastructure right. in place for that. And then that provides, you know, a place where people can find other groups. If they don't have a home group, they can play at conventions or in stores, mm-hmm. you know, and really, like, with monthly content coming out from the Starfinder Society, that's really creating a lot of opportunities to tell stories and for people to play.
Yeah, it's tremendous. And especially, I think this second season for Society Play, that it's a tighter story arc than early on, you know. And I think a lot of people are appreciating, you know, kind of the hidden things going on behind the scenes, and they're waiting for the big reveal.
Right.
You know? So I think that's
kind of a fine line, too, because as creative director, you know, I kind of I'm involved in sort of the overall planning of the season arcs, or at least for approval purposes. And it's kind of that fine line to walk, because you have the really dedicated Society players that want that deep continuity, but at the same time, we want to bring new people in, and that deep continuity can sometimes be a bit of a barrier. And so
it's trying
to find that balance, you know, to give both new people and the experienced people what they want in those stories.
Well, and what we're finding, so we run two tables a week typically. Up at Zulu's in Bothell. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all. Yeah, so it's 10 miles from here, so it's pretty close. And the nice thing about it, so we have our veteran group, and they're up to date with all, you know, we're running all the latest content all the time. And now we're bringing in like a table, sometimes two tables, of new people. And we actually, I just start them at, because I do all the organizing, so I start them with season one from the beginning. And so they kind of get because there's some really cool flavors through that. And what's really neat is, like, some of the more veteran players say, oh man, that was so much fun, I want to go back and play that again. So we're getting some crossover with that as well. But yeah, to jump right in, this is one of the things with me. So I haven't played a lot of Pathfinder 1, in part because I was gone for a long time doing other things before I came back to gaming. And when I started playing Pathfinder, it's like, wow, this is, you know, there's 10 years of history here to kind of weed through and figure out. And then so when, as soon as Starfinder was announced, I was like, wow, this is, first of all, I love sci-fi, and it's great to be on the ground level. And so it's the same thing with Pathfinder 2. You know, yes, there's a lot of overlap in terms of, say, lore with things, but the mechanics, the systems, everything is new enough that you're still kind of getting in at ground level.
Yeah.
You know? So it's a great, great, great place to start. So, well, another interesting thing has happened. So Paizo recently announced that Starfinder's on Alexa. So right now it's just the beginner box, right, has been programmed in, and that's a freely available, right?
Correct, yeah.
And then the Incident App's on station, so your first book of the AP is going to be a premium product?
Correct, yeah. Okay. So this first thing that came out in December was Scoundrels in the Spike. It's the solo adventure from the beginner box. And the Starfinder and Alexa, because it's a voice-based RPG, it's using primarily the beginner box rules, which are a bit streamlined from the main rules. But starting at the beginning of this year, 2021, there'll be premium episodes released of Incident at Absalom Station. It's going to be more than one episode. Mm-hmm. We're just going to kind of see how that goes.
So, and will that use the same beginner box rules, or will that kind of move people into the core rule book?
It's still, because you're playing with Alexa, you're playing with this voice assistant, and it's a solo experience, it is using more of the beginner box type streamline. So it's really like an adaptation of Incident at Absalom Station. You know, we write our adventures, our adventure paths to, you know, for the assumption of a four-player group.
Right.
This is primarily a solo experience. Right. You have one character, Raya the Technomancer, who's kind of your friend who accompanies you, that can kind of help your character do stuff that your character can't. But it is an adaptation, so it is primarily using beginner box rules, but it's even streamlined a little bit from that for the medium.
And so the premium content, it's starting with Incident Absalom Station. And is that going to be kind of like pilot testing how it works? Or is it like, no, we're going on, we're adding more content and that's just the first thing. Do you have a sense for that yet?
Yeah, well, the pilot episode, this free pilot episode, is kind of like the test bed. There's mm-hmm. still there's still like beta testing involved with the other things. We're kind of waiting to see. We have several episodes planned. We mm-hmm. haven't announced fully what that is that are dealing with Absalom Station
right.
and or Incident at Absalom Station. And you know, if we'd love to keep going with it. We're just kind of, we haven't even released the first of the premium episodes
right.
yet. So it's certainly something that we would like to continue doing if mm-hmm. we can.
Yeah. And actually, you know, given what you're saying, that it's kind of a one player kind of perspective on things, and it's a modification, you know, using the beginner box rules, it almost seems like it would be really cool to like maybe flesh out different parts of Absalom Station. You know, so rather than, you know, try to get in, you know, if you were to go through that whole AP, there's a lot of really complicated stuff, right? You know, from book one and two,
right.
and so on and so forth. But if you were to even just say, oh, you know what, we're going to go through book one, but then we're going to go on to some side trails where maybe people are interested in seeing what else happens in the Spike or in the Download District or whatever it is, you know, Fusion Queen, what it's normally like when there's, you know, things are going on, and allow people, you know, basically introduce some additional content for people that are hungry to learn more, but not necessarily that was part of the original AP. I don't know, I'm just kind of thinking out loud that would be really cool, you know, because if I'm, like, I imagine a lot of people listen to podcasts when they're doing other things and they, you know, like if you're working or if you're like around here to be driving a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, I just want to learn new stuff. You know, well, I've already played Incident at Absalom Station a couple of times. I've GM'd it a couple of times. So I'm not really interested in hearing that. But man, I'd like to learn about a lot of these little other parts that, you know, they mention, but they don't really get into what's there. So anyway, so I'm just putting a plug. I hope something like that's in there.
I mean, there is a little bit of that because it is a challenge to
right.
take an adventure. You know, GMs add a lot
right.
to their
yes.
games beyond what is published yeah. in an adventure. And unfortunately, GMs don't have to be programmed ahead of time
right.
like Alexa
right.
does. So there are places where we have had to change things from
right.
the adventure just for the format or whatever. And in some cases, that's a little bit of new content. But it is mm-hmm. primarily, you know, it's like we have this story that we
right.
published. And it is primarily just another way to deliver that story.
Right.
It's not so much to give a whole bunch of new stuff. But there
yeah.
is some, there's some new characters that, you
yeah.
know, that might be something that like a GM might have
mm-hmm.
created on the fly to do something, you know, and those are in there. So there is definitely some new content, but
mm-hmm.
it is primarily focusing on at least the major story beats
right.
of that adventure.
Well, I look forward to that. I think that's going to be really cool. And I'm actually curious what led, like, why did you decide to do that in the first place? You know, why you say, you know what, we should do Starfinder on Alexa. How did that idea come about?
With a lot of our licensing things, you know, it's people come to us saying
that. Okay,
and so
Amazon said, "Hey, we want to put Starfinder on there."
The Alexa Games
yeah.
team
originally,
approached us and were like, "Hey, we got this
yeah.
thing," and we talked it over in various ways,
and
that's kind of. Yeah, that's kind of how it happened. It's, you know, we're always looking for new opportunities.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And that's the kind of, yeah, and then it just kind of came together.
So do you think we'll see Pathfinder 2nd Edition on Alexa too? Or is that too modern of a device for...
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's certainly a possibility. I think it does fit better with Starfinder
because
you can have you can have an AI on your comm unit
yeah.
that you talk to in the game,
yeah.
and, oh, look, that's Alexa.
Yeah.
You know, so it's... It does, I think, map better to Starfinder a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. So what advice do you have for people interested in writing or even developing, you know, RPGs?
Well, there's not really, like, I could say one way. I mean,
yeah.
I entered a contest, and that was how I got
yes,
into it.
Yes, we should have more contests. Yeah.
But that's not, that's it's hard
yeah.
to say, oh, enter a contest and
yeah.
do it. There's a couple of things that I would say. I mean, the first thing is to play and read games, you know, not just the games that you already play or that you're interested in working on, but seeing what other people have done with mm-hmm. games and what's going on in the game industry. Another thing would be to go to conventions and just meet people. You know,
mm-hmm.
a lot of the creators, like Paizo, you know, we have PaizoCon, and we also go to Gen Con and other conventions, you know, and just sort of network both to meet game creators or other freelancers and
mm-hmm.
stuff. And then it's just a matter of actually sitting down and writing things mm-hmm. and submitting them. You know, there are lots of third-party publishers looking for new writers. There's lots of people that self-publish stuff, and it's a small industry, but it's got a lot of passionate people in it. And so, you know, it's, I guess that's the best thing I can say. And it's just, but I think it's also important to, you know, GMing or playing the game is not the same thing as creating a game right. for other people. Right. And so that's one of the things that you need to keep practicing your craft. You know, just like you can, I think you can become a better GM. The more you GM things, you'll become a better writer and right. creator, the more stuff sure. you do and take feedback and that sort of thing.
So what's next for you? So what's on your plate coming out down the road? Can we expect some really, really cool new Starfinder stuff?
Always. We're trying to do that. I mean, we work pretty far in advance, so there's things that are coming out that we've already finished working on. We're really excited about Near Space, which comes yeah. out in March. That's our first big significant expansion of the setting mm-hmm, beyond mm-hmm. the Pact Worlds. In particular, it's got a lot of stuff on the Vescarium.
Which a lot of people are waiting for, yes.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's like they're one of our core races, yes. and they're from this other solar yeah. system that gets like a column in the core yeah. rulebook about mm-hmm. it. So I'm really looking forward to seeing people's response to that and mm-hmm. getting a lot more information on Vesk culture and what their home system is like. That's coming up. And then after that, in the summer, we've got the Starship Operations Manual, right. mm-hmm. which has got all sorts of new Starship mm-hmm. options and rules and just all sorts of crazy Starships. So for the Starship side of things, there's big stuff coming on there. Of course, we've got Adventure Paths.
Yeah, so there's been a couple new ones coming down the road. In fact, one of them starting at level 13, so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, we've got the Threefold Conspiracy, which I think is just out now. That's a six-volume one. Once we get through with that, then we go, it's the Devastation Arc adventure path. And this is something that's going to, it starts at level 13. All of our adventure paths except one have, well, except two, have ended at level 13. Those two you can play together to get to level 13. So this is really designed to be a sequel to any of the other adventure paths.
Mm-hmm. And how far does that one take you?
We are planning on going to 20 with that one.
Wow, so three books all the way to 20.
I'll knock on wood to because we haven't done a high-level AP yet, but that is the plan. It's kind of, like I said, it can be a sequel to any of the APs that end at 13th level. It's thematically sort of a sequel to Dead Sons, our mm-hmm. first adventure path. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot more things tied to that, but it doesn't mean you have to play Dead Sons or any of the other ones. You could just make up 13th level characters and do it. But yeah, we're looking forward to that too, because that's our first high-level content that we're doing for Starfinder.
In society play, now in our particular group, we have a bunch of people with level 12 characters. And we're, you know, after we finish, so we have both Attack of the Swarm and Dead Sons going. So once those are done, everyone will have level 13s, which means once they complete that AP, they can actually get to level 14. Now they'll be waiting for another AP, you know, so they're trying to get their society characters up. Because society play, actually, we only have just the one scenario that's 9 to 12. Right, so that's the only higher level one, and I have a level 9, a level 10, and two level 12s, and I have one scenario I can play with them.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like I'm looking forward to some more higher level stuff when it comes. Well, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today, Rob. I really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll see you again, probably at PaizaCon and maybe at some other conventions, maybe down at ConQuest again. Probably not.
Maybe, but thanks for having me. It was a pleasure to be here.